many psalms, the psalmist is praising God. Many of them, he's praying, recounting perhaps his life, some of the difficulties of it, and then speaking to God, praying to God about it. In this particular psalm, and some others, but this one, he is preaching. So some he's praising, some he's praying, and in this one, he's preaching. I'd like to look at it verse by verse. We'll read it as we go through it verse by verse rather than all at once. Verse 1 says, "Hear this, all ye people. Give ear, all ye inhabitants of the world." And so, who's it to? Well, if you were to consult commentaries and other writers, it would not be uncommon that they would say, well, the world here means the world of the Jews, okay? Or the world of the people, at least in that area that he's writing to, but they would not think of it as the world everywhere, because after all, they didn't even know about the United States of America. Well, that's right, because it didn't exist. But that does not mean that they did not know of the land mass that has been identified as the North American continent. I think there was a whole lot more known about the world by the peoples of ancient times than what people of modern times seem to think. You know, one of the problems that man has is the man of whatever generation thinks he's at the epitome and has reached the ultimate. And, you know, we have many marvelous abilities and inventions today. But I don't think that they're necessarily the ultimate. I mean, let's go back and look at the Egyptians that built the pyramids. People are still baffled at how they could do that with hydraulics, without hydraulics. Okay? I know there's many people have studied this and have come up with ways to explain how it could be done, other than the fact that they just got a whole bunch of slaves and moved that big. But I mean, even a whole bunch of slaves, how do you move the size of the rocks, the stones that were used? And so we're just not all that much smarter than people of some generations in the past. Amen. And advantages, oh, we've got a lot of them. But I believe when it says here, all ye inhabitants of the world, it means just that, all of the world, everywhere possible. Okay? And now verse 2 is a reality of a society, any society, and all societies, since he's speaking to all the world. Both low and high. He says, give ear, hear this, listen up. And he says, both low and high, rich and poor together. Now that's the reality of it. There are rich people, there are poor people, always have been, always going to be.
Right.
Jesus said, the poor you'll always have with you.
That's right.
And the reality is there are some that are low and some that are high. Now, if you listen to the president's speech last night, he's going to make everybody equal in the United States of America. He is the great equalizer. And all he has to do is figure out how to work, and he get it done. I haven't figured that part out yet. Now, you don't sound like too favorable to him. Well, I haven't seen him do much other than mess things up. Okay? And so, well, let me get off of that. And so he says, in verse 2, he's just a current illustration. Both low and high. And there are people who are low in the totem pole of society. Okay? There are people who are high on it. And he's addressing them. In other words, he's saying what he's got about to say is good for all of them, rich and poor. Oh, yes, you see, some people are poor. Some people don't have as much money as others. I'm going to address that more. And some are very rich. And he says, this is a message for everybody, all of them together. Now, verse 3 says, my mouth shall speak of wisdom, and the meditation of my heart shall be of understanding. Now that's a theme that you'll often find in the Psalms, where the psalmist speaks of wisdom and of understanding. Of course, Proverbs the same way. And the speaking of wisdom and the knowing of wisdom and the using of wisdom, the having of wisdom is so important. And understanding, I've heard it put already, understanding is how to use the wisdom you have. Very many different ways to explain it. But the point is this that I want to focus on. And as I was reading it, that little word of. Now, what part of speech would that be in this sentence? Of.
Preposition.
Who?
Preposition.
Preposition. Okay. So, my mouth shall speak of wisdom. That preposition isn't just there as filler. Okay? He could have said, my mouth shall speak wisdom. Some specific point of truth. But speak wisdom. But he says, my mouth shall speak of wisdom. I think that preposition of is not unimportant.
That's right.
He's broadened the idea of what he's about to speak to say it's of wisdom. All embodiment of truth. All embodiment of wisdom. Not just a specific truth or specific point of wisdom. In the same way he goes on in the end of the verse, he says, my heart shall be of understanding. He could have said, my heart shall be with understanding. He said, he could have said, my heart shall be understanding. But he used that preposition of understanding. And so again, he's not just looking at a specific understanding or of understanding in a particular area, though he is going to deal with some particular areas, but I believe he's looking at it in the broad sense. Now, verse 4, I will incline mine ear to a parable and will open my dark saying upon the harp. A parable. Some identify it as an allegorical way of speaking. Others will call it a pictorial manner of speaking. Jesus used parables, and it was a story of some common experiences that he was making a word picture out of that was going to make a truth. And here, the psalmist says, I will incline mine ear to a parable. I'm going to pay attention to what I've heard regarding a parable, and particularly what he was going to say. I will open my dark saying upon the harp. Now, we don't know who this psalmist was. Some are identified as David. Okay? The psalmist here is not identified. It's just that it is a psalm. And he said, I will incline my... I will open my dark saying upon the harp. Now, dark here does not mean evil. Today when we say there's a dark saying, okay, there's, you see TV promos for dark secrets, and dark is used of evil, okay, that's not the way it's used here, okay, nor is it used that way in the Bible. It's not identifying a dark or an evil secret. It means something that's been hidden, something that's unknown. Okay, is the way it's used. Now, we don't use it like that, so that just doesn't naturally, you know, fit into the way we think of things. Even though I know what I just told you, nevertheless, when I hear dark sayings, okay, that other always comes in there. And he says, upon a harp, I will open my dark saying. In other words, the hidden thing, the thing that I'm now going to reveal to you, is I'm going to do it upon the harp. So it could be that he is going to be singing this, and we know the Psalms are songs, okay? But in the case of this being more of a preaching psalm, maybe he's being accompanied while he's saying this. A harpist is playing and accompanying him. Maybe he is just, you know, singing it. Okay? Maybe it's not so much singing as we would think of a song, but just got some musical to it, and it, you know, sort of, I think of it as a sing song, you know? He's sort of speaking, but it's sort of singing. I don't know exactly what he means. Okay? And there's probably people out there that do, but what it says is that he's going to reveal something that hasn't been known, and he's going to use a harp in the process of it. Now, you know what came to my mind? I don't really believe this, but what came to my mind is, wow, maybe this psalmist was the first rapper.
Yeah.
I mean, a rapper's not singing, but not just talking.
Yeah.
Okay. He's got the harp. I scratch that because, like I said, I wouldn't ever preach a sermon titled, you know, the first rapper. But you know, that might give us an idea of how he was going to be preaching this, how he was going to be saying this, and the music of a harp was involved. All right, verse 5. Wherefore should I fear in the days of evil? He said, I'm going to reveal this dark saying. And my mind, my mouth and my mind, they're on wisdom and on understanding. So he says, wherefore should I fear in the days of evil? See, everybody, low and high, rich and poor, need to pay attention to this, because they were living then, we are living now. It's given to the whole world, that includes us. And even now, wherefore should I fear in the days of evil? Now, there are some times that may not need to be described as evil, though evil always exists. But we live in such an evil society today. Okay? Everything seems to be about or have to do with sex. We are a sex-ridden society. Just sinfully so. Now listen, God created sex.
Right.
I have a class that I teach at, I used to teach at missionary training school. When I say I used to teach it, Pat used to go there, and she's not able to do that anymore because of the rigor of that whole long week. But we would teach a class to the missionaries, and she would teach the ladies, I would teach the men. And one of the things that I would talk, it was about marriage. And so one of the things I would ask the men, who created sex? Well, obviously all them theological missionaries knew God created it. So I said, then where should we go to get our understanding of it?
Math.
And you go to the Bible.
God.
You don't go to the streets. And but in our circles of Bible-believing, fundamentalism, conservatism, and whatever we want to identify, okay, in our circles, you don't talk about that stuff. Okay? Well, where do you talk about it then?
Come on.
Out in the streets? So most people to talk about it. And so it was always enjoy. It was a challenge to me to teach that class, because I could always, I had an ability to throw out a statement for its shock and awe value. Now, it didn't take much.
Yeah.
Okay. Because in our conservatism, they don't talk about them things. You just somehow know about them. Okay? And so, the point is, we are living in days of evil. And he says, when the iniquity of my heels shall compass me about. Now, when I found this psalm, and I saw the outline of which I'm sharing tonight, one of the things I didn't have time to do was look up the other scriptures that use the word heels and see how it's used. Okay? So, as to know, because that I found fascinating. When the iniquity of my heels shall compass me about. Well, heels refers to a foot. A foot would refer to walking. And so I'm wondering if the idea is that his enemy was trying to trap him in his own past moves. His own past steps wherein he didn't always do right. He made mistakes and they were trying to trap him in that very thing. It would take more time to really confirm if that would fit or not. But sure sounds good for my purposes tonight, huh? Okay, thank you. Glad you caught a little bit of humor and sarcasm in that. Now, look at verse 6, because I think verse 6 to 8 talk about the fact that you can't buy salvation. They that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches, it's a semicolon, meaning the thought continues. None of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. And then it's a colon, which means it continues. For the redemption of their soul is precious, and it ceaseth forever. And then you see, if you're looking at it, a smiley face. Now it's not. It's another colon, but it's in parentheses. So when I looked at it, I thought, that's a smiley face. No, that can't be a smiley face. Oh, such a deep mind. And then the thought continues into verse 9 that he should still live forever and not see corruption. But you can't buy salvation. None of them can by any means redeem his brother nor give to God a ransom for him. You know what that made me think of? When people in the Roman Catholic system, someone dies, and of course the Roman Church teaches that then they would be going to purgatory, and you would pay to have masses said for them.
That's right, yes, sir.
Okay, hoping that they will be able to get out of purgatory. Now listen, none of them can by any means redeem his brother nor give to God a ransom for him. The redemption of any person's soul is precious, and it ceaseth forever. I mean, it's precious. I mean, the soul lives forever. And it's not going to end. There's going to be no time where it ends that you can't buy a person's redemption. As a matter of fact, 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 18 and 19 says, not by silver or gold, but by the precious blood of Jesus we are redeemed. Now, in verse 9 to 10, he actually 9 to 11, he deals with the fact that all die. That he should still live forever and not see corruption. That's the case of the person who's redeemed by the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. For he seeth that wise men die, likewise the fool. They both die. And the brutish person perishes. And they leave their wealth to others. Their inward thought is, here's what they're thinking, that their houses shall continue forever. That is their lineage, the people that are in the line of their family, that they shall live forever, and their dwelling places to all generations. So the houses they build, the mansions they build, they'll go on for forever. They call their lands after their own names. There are people who have had wealth and money, and because of the prominence where they live, maybe they haven't named the mountain on which they live Mount Miller. But people have come to know it as Miller Mountain. Because, after all, that's where the rich man Miller lives, you see. And then, of course, we do have people that like to name streets after themselves. And, well, you know, if you have a long lane, you can buy a street sign that has your name on it and put it there. I'm not talking about that so much as I am people that actually get a street named after them. And all of these things, of whatever sort, they think they're going to live forever. And the common view is that they're going to, but no, they're not going to. Verse 12 to 15, let me read it. Nevertheless, man being in honor abideth not. He is like the beasts that perish. This their way is their folly, yet their posterity approve their saying. I mean, it's folly to think that they're going to abide forever, they're going to live forever. And the psalmist says, listen, the man's going to be like an animal. He's going to die. This way is folly, yet their posterity approve their saying. Their children and their grandchildren, their nephews and their nieces, they all approve the sayings that person made. They all say, well, you know, my granddaddy used to say, well, you know, my uncle always said. Well, there's a way that's common. But not when a person's going to base the eternity on it.
Right, yes, sir.
Not when a person's going to base how they live.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I know I shouldn't do that, but my daddy always did it. Well, just because your daddy did it doesn't mean you have to do it. If it wasn't good, you shouldn't do it. Break that chain.
Yeah.
Break that cycle.
Yes, sir.
Verse 14. Like sheep, they are laid in the grave. Death shall feed on them. And the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. And their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling. So does this mean that we have no future beyond the grave? You know, verse 12 says they're like the beast that perish. And then he says in verse 14, like the sheep, they're laid in the grave. Well, now, listen, we who are here tonight know different.
Right.
We know that there's a difference between you, a human being, and other human beings when they die versus an animal when it dies. We know that there's a difference. But many people would read such a verse and use it to prove the idea, oh, well, you don't have to get saved because when you die, you're just going to be like an animal. You get put in a grave just like your dog does. No, not according to the Bible.
Right.
Look at Ecclesiastes, if you'll turn there after Proverbs. After Proverbs, you'll find the book of Ecclesiastes. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 18. Okay, Ecclesiastes 3 and 18. I said in mine heart concerning the estate of the sons of men. Now that doesn't mean estate like, you know, great big landmass. That God might manifest them, and that they might see that they themselves are beasts. For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts. Even one thing befalleth them. As the one dieth, so dieth the other. Okay. You got the flesh of animals, you got the flesh of people. And what he's saying is, you know, they all die. They have breath in them, and then they stop breathing. Their heart stops pumping blood, and so then they die. So that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. Now, you've got to understand, the man that's speaking is speaking man's wisdom. And there is a commonness of life. Animals have life. People have life. Animals eat to sustain life. People eat to sustain life. Okay? Understand? Animals breathe. People breathe. There's some common things there. Out of that commonness, some have said, all we are is a higher form of animalhood.
Mm-hmm.
Animalhood, I think I just coined the word. Okay? That's not true. That goes with evolution. You see, that thought didn't just start with Charles Darwin, though he sure did promote it. All right? But here we have that kind of thought. Now let's go on. I'm at verse 20. All go unto one place. In other words, an animal dies and a man dies. Why? Because the heart stops pumping, because the lungs stop breathing, and there's no more breath in them. And we know that life is in breath. If you can't breathe, you can't live. And so they both die, all go into one place, and are of the dust. Okay, yeah, people die, they get buried. Animals die, they get buried. And all turn to dust again. Well, we know that, that man turns to dust, and animals turn to dust. Go back and dig up that grave long enough afterwards, and that's what you're going to find. Now, the key is in verse 21. Now, if you're not looking at the Bible, you'll miss it. Verse 21. Who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, and the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth?
Yes, sir.
Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion, for who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? And so, the writer of Ecclesiastes is giving us man's view and understanding of things, but at the same point he is making the fact in verse 21, the spirit of man, when man dies and his body is placed in the grave, his spirit goes upward. Now, Paul tells us, absent from the body, present with the Lord. That's not said of animals. Okay? The spirit of the animal goeth downward to the earth. Man's right. When a dog dies, that's it, he's dead. Now, you gave a verse on Sunday to a question regarding the soul of an animal. That part of animal that would have emotions, and you know, just like you can be angry, well, your dog can be mad, okay? And you can be happy, and your dog can be happy. His tail, you know, all over the place. You get mad, and you know, you scrowl like this, and your dog lays his ears back, and so you know, there's emotions, there's that soulishness, and what there's a verse you gave regarding the soul of animals.
It's in the book of Numbers. It says that the soul of beeves, B-E-E-V-E-S. You'll find that phrase.
Okay. Soul of beeves. You know, you said it then, and I looked it up, but I didn't write it down until now. And so so there is that soulishness of the animal. But again, it doesn't say of animals, they go up to heaven.
That's right.
Okay? Now, so those who say we're no different than an animal, this is always the passage that I take them to. Verse 16, back in Psalm 49. Verse 16 and 17, the heading that I gave to it is you can't take it with you.
Yes, sir.
Okay? You can't take it with you. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. Now, there's other places in the Bible that tell us you can't take it with you. But this is certainly one of them. His glory shall not descend after him. Right now, he's rich. He's high. And he's got all kinds of human glory, and people honor him, and people admire him. And hey, listen, he makes it very clear here, when this guy dies, his glory shall not descend after him. He's just going to be as dead as the low person and the poor person. You can't take it with you. That's a very pagan concept. As with the Egyptian kings, the pharaohs, when they were buried, all kinds of stuff was buried with them for the afterlife, the afterworld. That's why people wanted to excavate the graves of the pharaohs, because there was all kinds of gold and jewels and unimaginable wealth that was buried with them. Why'd they bury that there? Why, so when he got to the afterworld, he'd have all of them things. Oh, but without the Bible, they did not know that they would not
have. That's right, brother.
Now, remember this. It is only stuff, and it will all be burned up. Don't. You know, when you labor over what you don't have and what you'd like to have, just remember, it's stuff. I know Pat has told our children already, now we don't have much to leave you, but what we have to leave you, and you know, household objects and things that you might want, I've got a drawer in my dresser that's a junk drawer, okay? And my grandsons, They argue over who's going to get the junk drawer. And my oldest grandson said, I'm the oldest, I get to go through it first. And so they all argue over. I said, hey, there's something in there that Sam wants. And I said, well, Sam, do you want it now? He said, no, not now. I don't want it now. I want it until you die. And so, okay. And so, you know, it's only stuff. It'll all be burned up. Now, if we really believe this, that it's only stuff, then we need to live by it. We need to stop envying people that have it and coveting and longing for it and pitying ourselves for not having it.
Oh,
I know none of us do that. Let me give you an imaginary illustration where this could happen. An Audi or a BMW. Sorry, you already have one. Maybe a nice Cadillac Seville.
Never.
Okay. What kind of vehicle would you? How about a brand new minivan?
Yes.
You see, now, we know we shouldn't covet. We know we shouldn't envy. But, okay, we love our house. 211 North 19th Street. It's a very nice house, a very comfortable house. But, we see some houses that would probably have rooms a little bigger than ours. Okay? I mean, it's a kitchen. It'd be nice to have a dining room with the kitchen. The kitchen's what you call an eat-in kitchen. But depending on how many people you put in to eat. Okay? So, we don't cover that.
That's good.
We have to search our soul. Now, to see something else, to appreciate it, to like it, I don't think there's wrong in that. But boy, that can be a fine line that you can very easily trip over. And it would be tripping over it. Because the old devil would be there to pull a string or whatever and cause you to trip over it. So the reality of some things are there, but we must be careful that the reality of that doesn't get us into the area of sin. And you know, I really do think we need to stop the spiritual sounding explanations and just admit it if it's envy.
That's right. Yes.
Okay? You know, boy, I'll tell you, we can really wax great with all kinds of spiritual talk about this thing. And oh, just shut up and admit it. We can't, you know? But I must quick say this. It's not sin to have things. Remember, Paul said, the love of money is the root of all evil. He didn't say money is. So if you get an opportunity to work overtime to earn some more money, that's all right.
Yeah, right.
It's just that when that's all you live for, that becomes a problem.
Got it.
But it's not wrong to have money. And also, please, this is in big letters on my notes. Being poor does not make a person spiritual.
That's right. You got that.
You can be as sinfully proud as a poor person as can a rich man.
Come on.
Spirituality comes by the yieldedness of the heart and the life to God Almighty.
Yes, sir.
That's why the Apostle Paul could say, in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content.
Yes, sir.
I have abounded and I have been in want. And so we need to really get things into perspective. I got to wrap it up. Verse 18. Though while he lived, he blessed his soul. This is the rich man, the evil man. And men will praise thee when thou doest well to thyself. Now he's comparing the two, you see. He got the one who blessed his own soul, blessed his own life. And he says, then men will praise thee when thou doest wealth to thyself. He shall go to the generation of his fathers. Then see the last words. They shall never see light. So this fella that's dying, who's lived evil and all gotten all of his honor and glory here and hasn't followed God, he's never going to see light. That definitely would mean that when he dies, there's no second chance. He's never going to be able to see light then. But I believe what it's saying is that he's never going to see light. Because in hell,
that's right. You got it.
There is no light.
God.
That's right, brother.
There is utter darkness where there's that wailing and gnashing of teeth. Man that is in honor and understandeth not is like the beasts that perish. This guy's no better than an animal that dies without God.
Amen. Good, brother. Very good.
That's it.
Like it.
Now, we'll share some prayer requests. Can anybody tell me about Peter Cornelius and his GED test? Has
they're
he taken it yet?
Off again. There's just different paperwork and stuff. Okay. So it's kind of frustrating them as they put
I would on. Guess. Okay, Dan Morey had his back surgery. It went well, Dale said. He got out of recovery, and he'll be there for a couple days.
Yeah, I'm going to pick him up Friday.
Going to pick him up Friday.
Yeah,
all right.
Just a quick, please pray for their spiritual life.
Okay.
Their wife and kids.
Pray for their spiritual life. We'd like to ask you to pray for a young man, 23 years old, named William Speer. S-P-I-E-R. Lives in Northern Ireland. He is the brother of a lady who we know through our daughter, Monica, that lives over there. This lady came and lived with us for 6 months so she could entertain a relationship. Thank you.